Welcome. I'm Lauren Rosen, licensed marriage and family therapist.
And I'm Kelly Franke, licensed marriage and family therapist. And this is Purely OCD.
Kelly and I are OCD specialists who happen to also be in recovery from OCD ourselves. Each week we meet to talk about all things OCD, one topic at a time.
You may notice we try to bring a little levity and humor to our discussion around this deeply painful disorder, as this has been a very powerful tool for our own recovery as well as our clients.
If you'd care to join us, we record live on Mondays at 12:30 p.m. Pacific time on YouTube. We generally answer a few questions from our live viewers related to whatever topic we're covering that week. And if there's a topic you'd like covered, you can also submit a request on our website, purelyocd.com.
And if you do find this podcast helpful, please leave us a review so we can gain more visibility to reach more people like yourself and help spread awareness of what it's like to live with OCD.
Quick reminder, this is not intended as therapy or as a replacement for therapy. This is for educational purposes only.
So without further ado, here is this week's episode.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Purely OCD, where we are joined by Michael Steer and Josh Patalnik, Dr. Josh Patalnik. And so we are thrilled to have you both on board today. These two gentlemen are fabulous in their own right. They also recently came out with a wonderful book about health anxiety. And to sort of round out this discussion on health anxiety, we thought it would be only appropriate to have them join. So I'm going to let them kind of introduce themselves a little bit more, and then we'll launch into, you know, grilling them, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Sweet.
I hope you like being grilled.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Michael, you're on top of me. I guess you want to go first?
Sure. I'll go first. I was going to say my name is Michael Steer. I'm a licensed clinical professional counselor in St. Louis, Missouri. Well, actually, it's in Illinois. But anytime I say Illinois, people assume it's Chicago. So it's actually next to St. Louis. had my own private practice for a while. And a couple years ago, I was able to meet the person right here below me and was able to join the team at Anxiety Specialists of Atlanta, treating OCD, other related disorders. And I would say in the last 3 years or so, really got into a lot of the things with health anxiety, just find a lot of interest in it. And we're kind of here now. So really glad that you guys asked us to be on and excited to talk about some health anxiety today.
Awesome. And I'm the proud papa of Anxiety Specialists of Atlanta, an awesome group that does have clinicians in multiple states, but we see people in over 40 states around the country. We have over 20 clinicians treating all sorts of anxiety and OCD of all ages. I'm Dr. Josh Spitonik. I'm a licensed psychologist, board certified in cognitive and behavioral psychology. And just pleased to be here. Pleased to be with both of you. We love Purely OCD and love your podcast and all the work you guys do, and excited to talk about everything about health anxiety. You guys had a bunch of episodes recently. We're happy to maybe finish off that round of health anxiety stuff and answer a bunch of questions.
Yes. Awesome.
Fabulous. Well, take it away, Kel.
Well, okay. So thank you guys for all of that. Yeah. Big fans of you all. But tell me a little bit more about, I guess, why health anxiety and why you chose that. Michael, you mentioned you enjoy working with that, and I'm just curious why you guys decided to tackle it.
Well, and I think, you know, when we first started kind of talking about a lot more about health anxiety, it actually started out with a collaboration, a presentation that we were kind of passing some information back and forth on and kind of history from there, which is kind of unbelievable. But I think one of the things that we both recognized was the fact that it is not identified often by a lot of different people, whether that's psychotherapists or medical professionals, and just not really acknowledged. And also as OCD, you know, treatment professionals, we can see it often. And so I think what we started to notice was there was a lot of times where people were struggling with health anxiety, but maybe there wasn't a lot of, awareness brought to it, or just a lot of information out there for people to access. Also, I know when we were looking through the first statistics, when Josh and I were looking at them, we were kind of looking and they say about 5 or 10% of people struggle with health anxiety. Mm-hmm. And we were kind of reflected on that statistic as probably really grossly underreported. Because those are the people that we just can say, okay, this might be health anxiety, but I can't even imagine how many people are in the position where maybe they're seeking doctors and just they haven't, you know, been included in that part. So I think that's what's really sparked our interest, was not only just the enjoyment of working with it, but just the acknowledgement that, you know, the resources for people to be able to access and be able to just feel that validation of like, oh my goodness, like this is a thing. And this is something that also I can get better from too.
Yeah. Mm.
To add to that, all four of us are active in the International OCD Foundation, which does an amazing job advocating for and educating the communities here and around the world about everything you want to think about OCD and all sort of its comorbid conditions. And as silly as this sounds, health anxiety sort of gets no attention. And health anxiety for probably almost all the professionals in the OCD community, whether they mean to or not, are treating some version of health anxiety, whether we view it as a health subtopic in OCD, whether they're treating, you know, kids with emetophobia and needle fears, or people that are battling real medical issues, which we wouldn't normally diagnose or call something like health anxiety. Almost everyone working with individuals that battle anxiety, by definition, when they have panic and symptoms that are on the inside of our body, are dealing with people that are afraid of medical and physical issues. So Michael and I, as you said, you know, some collaborations and some presentations we talked about, really got excited about this topic. And there is no home for health anxiety. There's been a few books out there, some gear a little bit more towards the academic side. And Michael and I decided that we were going to write a book that, you know, I don't know if we intentionally wanted to disrupt the industry, but it was definitely a book that would not be conventional. It is a book that hits all the right notes of the science behind health anxiety treatment, following all the cognitive behavioral practices that are out there. But we use a lot of storytelling and humor and some dad jokes and some pop media culture references and just all sorts of stuff, really to get people engaged and excited about the topic. Because again, the topic, not too different than some of the OCD spaces, is morbid and it's sad and it's depressing. And for most of us who do this work, we have a lot of energy and excitement for talking about and nerding out about anxiety. And health anxiety is often about death and dying and illness. And it doesn't have to be just about that. So we're proud that the book is out, and we're proud that it brings the best of the best of what we think about treating health anxiety. But we're also proud that we're getting, you know, responses and feedback from people that we would never have met that said, thank you for using your voice and feeling like I'm having a therapy session with you, because I'm learning about health anxiety, but I'm having fun and it's engaging to understand that I'm not alone. And for us, that's like the best feedback possible. So we've launched a website. It's just basic overcominghealthanxiety.com. We have a book out there, and Michael and I go on podcasts like this and we run free support groups and are just like 24/7 trying to help people get connected and not feel alone battling all the versions of what health anxiety means.
Yeah. And so amazing that you guys are doing all of that. And the website is such a cool resource. And yeah, actually we wanted to talk to you both about your use of humor. I'm glad that it kind of came up naturally in the book, because when I was reading through it, I remember guffawing the first time I read about the fact that you were trying to break into the zombie market?
Apocalyptic market.
Yes.
Dead people who are going to write reviews for our book is a market that Amazon has not tapped into yet. So anyone who's actually died and who has read our book and can leave us a review, if we get a single review from a
from
previously
an undead
dead
person.
Lauren and Kelly, we're done. We can retire.
Well, we've been meaning to tell you that actually we are undead.
You're welcome. So,
oh boy.
Good night, everybody. I do plan to write a review, because it's really such a fabulous resource. And I was like really considering going in and saying that I was a zombie like coming up with a name. But in any case, we feel very strongly that humor is such an invaluable part of recovery. And you've done such a beautiful job of weaving it throughout the book, including in the title. And I guess we wanted to get your feedback on like why that was important to you beyond what you've obviously already stated, like making it personal and all of that. So yeah, if either of you want to speak to that, that'd be awesome.
Well, Michael, I got some commentary. Go.
Okay. I was going to say, you know, I think the one thing that we had to have a good discussion about in the very beginning was that if we were going to incorporate a book like this, it might not be for everyone, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one of the things that you learn as a therapist, is that you're not going to work with everyone and that everyone's going to like you, except for me. Everybody else has to deal with that. Just kidding, of course. And that's okay. That's, you know, and but we want it to be a different resource. And also, I usually tell people I do like to read, but graduate school kind of ruined it for me. And so we also wanted to write a book that I could really sit down and I would want to read. And we hope that other people do too. And so, you know, I think there was a lot of motivation behind it in that realm of wanting to find a resource that not only, like Josh had mentioned, brings you good science, but then also helpful interventions and kind of helps you walk you through kind of every step of the way, but also does it hopefully in a relatable way. And also in a way that wants to keep you reading. So it doesn't feel like we have to go through kind of a manualized workbook, but it feels like we could be sitting down and having a conversation with one of us.
It's that simple for us. And we try to be delicate to the nature of what kind of humor to use, because we don't want to make fun of people with health anxiety. We want to make fun of ourselves as therapists, and we want to make fun of ourselves as humans who overinterpret all the bodily symptoms and what it might or might not mean. But, you know, all of the colleagues that we have that write these books that we adore, and we've bought all of them, and I've endorsed them, and I use them. They're right next to me in all of our offices in my practice. You know, I love them, and they're great. I just felt like we wanted to have a book that, as Michael, you said, Da Vinci Code was one of those breakthrough books for me as someone who doesn't read a lot outside of professional, that I read and felt like, how did the person write this? And you like, it's a page turner. And I know our book's not a page turner. And as Michael said, it's not for everybody. And we're okay with that. We've made our peace with the fact that not everyone likes this brand of therapy that even Kelly, you and Lauren do, which is facing your fears and talking about scary things and dipping your toe into that worry world. We're okay with that. But I would hate to have a book like this that was read where by chapters 3, 4, and 5, people kind of felt like they were done with it. And though the book does evolve very steadily with baby steps of learning the basic concepts at the beginning of the mindset of being an anxiety specialist, not just as therapists, but like we're teaching people to be their own anxiety specialist. They never need a therapist ever again, which is every therapist's goal, to the very end of bringing it all together. If you don't get to the end of the book, you can't bring it all together. So, you know, we're not the best writers in the world, but we're okay with that. But we wrote a book that we hope that you got some information in the chapter and you thought that was ridiculous and silly and crazy. What are they going to write next? And trust me, the next chapter, we did it again. And then it again and again and again. So we're hoping that you do learn from it, but that you're just foolish enough to keep reading through to go, what silly, stupid thing did they put in the next? Because trust me, it's throughout the book. And that's fun. It's cool. It's silly. And we're trying to not take ourselves too seriously, but the topic is so serious and the importance of helping people is so serious. Reading the pages should not have to be so serious. And hopefully we found that right balance between education, entertainment, and keeping people focused on the book becoming a self-help journey guide for them.
I think you certainly did, personally. Actually, can I throw out a question that it's sort of off of what you were just saying.
We're going to say no and move on to the next question.
Okay, so, next question. Oh, Michael, so damn close. It. I hate it when I get, you know, sort of like shoved out of my own podcast. No, but I think also there's a lot of heart in the book. And it relates to one of the questions that I saw pop up in the feed, which is why I wanted to bring it up. Josh, you talk about your dad in the book and about his, you know, his death. And I was reading through and somebody mentioned the, can we get a closer look?
Right, yeah. Let's zoom in a little.
That's
more.
almost a decade ago. It's my boy and my dad.
Oh, man. Kind of hard to see with the stupid ring light. So special.
He's with me everywhere.
Yeah,
definitely.
And it was really like, it was really moving, like that you opened up about that. And, but it really hit home too, because you're like talking about the fact that you all are of the mind that he lived every moment of his life. And instead of, you know, getting so caught up in the, you know, trying to prevent illness that he never, you know, would have gotten sick and all that idea. And to the point of the book, like, probably would have gotten sick anyway, but somebody brought up existential OCD. And I think that based on what you were saying at the very beginning as well, there's so much overlap between these different subtypes and health. And I'm curious if either of you have any thoughts on that, and especially in the context of having shared about your personal experience.
I'll start there, and then Mike would love to hear your thoughts on this as well, because he and I went back and forth of how much we do disclose in the book. And, you know, I have three siblings and my mom's alive and want to respect their privacy and stuff. But my dad was my hero, still is my hero, and I learned a lot from him. But my version of his passing, and that may not be the same as my mom's or my siblings, is that he lived a pretty healthy life in general, worked for most of his life and then retired and got to enjoy sort of the golden years. And then he died of cancer, which, you know, a third of us, as we put in the book, are going to get diagnosed with cancer at some point in our lives. Doesn't mean we're all going to die from it. But the existential part is, do we spend our lives living in fear of that death moment? Or do we spend our lives reveling in and making the most of being alive, because tomorrow is not promised for any of us? And so I decided to disclose that because I'd give anything to have him back, as anyone who's ever lost a loved one would. And I can't get him back, but I didn't lose time with him. And though his death was, you know, an 8-month process of, he had lung and brain cancer that spread so quickly, by the time we found out, you know, it was kind of a little too late. So it was just sort of quality of life and prolonging the process of before he passes. But to my knowledge and my storyline, and corroborated this with my family, was that he spent about 73 years mostly being healthy. And he could have spent the last 5 years, you know, existentially and worry-wise, thinking about death and dying and trying to prevent it. But then we'd have lost those precious years. And some might argue, yeah, but like, you would have had 6 more years after that. And my thought was, but those are not 6 good years if you're spending the previous 5 years worrying about worrying about worrying. So any one of us who's lost someone that's close to us would give anything to have them back. But the point of this book, the point of OCD work, the point of health anxiety work, is living the fullest life you possibly can for the time you have it. And so I feel very proud sharing that story, because it feels like the kind of life I want to live. And I hope I'm as lucky as him to have a full life and live as much as you possibly can. And when your time is up, your time is up. But until then, make the most of it. And it's kind of a basic story. That's not a hard lesson for us to get behind. But I think so many of us who battle anxiety spend so much time living in that crystal ball world of trying to plan for a world that hasn't happened yet, to try and prevent things that haven't happened yet. And as Michael and I talk about, that's the cancer. So yes, orange is the new black. Health anxiety is the new cancer, which is, even if you don't have cancer, or, you know, you're battling a stroke or Alzheimer's or name the illness, you may not have that, but the time you're spending worrying about it is the disease. And if we can eliminate that and make the most of your time and still follow up with your doctors and get regular checkups and do all the things we should do to take care of our health, then that's the most we can ask, to be as, you know, preventative and prophylactic about our health and live life to the fullest, which is the spirit of the book. So I'm proud that I shared that, Lauren Kelly. I really appreciate you guys acknowledging that passage, which is a very small part of the book. But he's my hero and taught me a lot, and miss him a lot. But I don't miss, you know, him worrying about an illness that he never had. And so we got to enjoy him to the fullest until cancer took him. And that's a story I can get behind.
Yeah.
I think the only thing I would add to that too is that it kind of goes back to maybe even one of the first questions that we talked about, of like, why have we gotten down this road of health anxiety in the first place? And I think a common experience that I hear from a lot of people, at least that I know that I also felt as a therapist, whenever I was looking at OCD and thinking about, like, wow, this is really interesting, I could, you know, I'd like to get more specialized in this, was, at least personally for me, was this experience of there's a, you know, a population of people that are looking for help that maybe can't find it, that maybe they're in other different types of therapy that just are not helping, because we know that we just need a little bit of special tools. And that was always really motivating to me, was bringing some of that validation and then also the relief to get better. Mm-hmm. And I think this was kind of an area of health anxiety that we started to recognize too, which is so many people in the throes of the medical system, going to an appointment, going to a doctor, getting a scan done, getting a test done, and being able to just give some validation, some information, but then also at some point maybe pointing to treatment, to be able to, you know, psychological treatment, not maybe necessarily medical treatment, to actually feel better, I just think is super cool. And so I think there's so much of that that's ingrained, not only in our book, but just our fascination and also our desire and passion to help with health anxiety, is just because of that, is that there's a lot of people suffering, and it, you know, who knows where information can lead at that point.
Yeah,
absolutely. So I actually haven't, I'm going to confess here, I have not read the book yet, which is terrible.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
Off the podcast.
Michael and I read a video out. Stop being my friend.
Michael and I read it like 1,000 times because we're our own sort of editors and publishers. Right. And stuff. So we got you covered. You're good.
I know, but I can't wait. It's in my Amazon checkout.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I love the title and all of that.
So but good.
And speaking with Lauren, I know there's a lot of mindfulness as well, which I think speaks to everything we're just talking about, right? Is like not robbing us from the present moment, not mourning a death before there's been death. And I am excited to see the mindfulness piece because the more work I do with people, the more I realize like mindfulness is kind of where it all is. That's kind of the secret component ingredient to all of this. It's just about being in the present, which it's not just, that's a very hard ask. It's very difficult, but I don't know how much you're willing to share around this stuff, but if you could speak to how you bring this into the book, because I have not read it.
We talk a lot about clearing your mind and being calm and just not having thoughts. So that's
pretty much the answer. Stop thinking. Just don't do that. Just stop it.
Why are you doing that?
Just don't think.
There's such an importance to this. Not only do I feel like, you know, of what we've been able to see research-wise, especially with the introduction of ACT, there's a lot of acceptance and a lot of mindfulness components that I see. I think we see a lot of helpful attitudes and helpful interventions that we can bring along with mindfulness. But I think it's such a fabric of health anxiety, for me, at least in two ways, which is one is there's always going to be these relationships that we have with whether it's symptoms itself. So if that's, you know, my chest is tight or my stomach hurts or I have a pain over here. And there's so many judgments and evaluations and all of these different things that start to go through our mind. And when we think about mindfulness and we think about the attitudes that we can bring in through mindfulness, there's a lot of things about non-judgment and also a beginner's mind, seeing something from a beginner's standpoint. And a lot of times those don't have those stories kind of written into them. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times we can use a lot of the objectivity that can come with mindfulness instead of the subjectivity that often can happen so often, right? It's like we notice a symptom, which we could also call a trigger or a T. And then we get the scary thought that goes through our mind about what that means or what that could be, or this could be cancer or whatever that might be. And I think, you know, kind of like what you're also saying at the very end of this, and we kind of go into this with the, you know, whether it's in therapy or a book, is this values piece, which is there's such an experience of living in the future in terms of what this could be, how life could go, and then also how that affects the present moment. And we're spending all this time in the present moment doing all of these, which we would call either rituals or safety behaviors. And for us, we just call them rituals or compulsions of checking our pulse or checking our fitness watch or going to the doctor or heading to the emergency room. And in those moments, it completely takes us out of probably the most important things that are going on in that moment, which is being with your family or with a loved one or a spouse or at a concert or all of these different things of how we can just be transported away. So I think that it's such an important aspect that we can use in those two ways about not necessarily clearing our mind or any of those different types of things or just not thinking. I'm sure people have tried that one before.
good luck with that.
But, yeah.
You're just going to keep ending up with us.
Yes.
Spoiler alert. It's not going to work. Go ahead.
Yes. You know, but just really trying to strengthen that practice, which we could call a lot of different things, whether it's a practice of meditation or just being, you know, whatever that might be, of redirecting our mind onto what's most helpful in those moments. Yeah. Now, sometimes that's scary, you know, because it feels like we have to give up some things of like, well, but if you're telling me I need to redirect my mind onto something more important, then we also have to deal with the scary anxiety that can be there about, but what if I don't check? Or what if I miss something and all of those different types of things? So I try to work those things into whether it's therapy itself. And there's parts of the book that are also just trying to integrate not only just the practice of mindfulness, but also the attitudes that we can bring with it that I think can really help supplement therapy.
Yeah. And that is the response prevention, right? Of the mental rumination.
I want to hit that, Michael, because there's the act of mindfulness, which is a bunch of skills we can all teach people. And then there's the state of mind of mindfulness. And I get concerned even seeing some of the comments about, I can't do mindfulness because I'm anxious all the time. And my thought is, that's already being mindful. The fact that you're aware that you're anxious all the time, believe it or not, is a mindfulness skill. Someone might argue with that, but we start off the book talking about the mind. Before we even get, we joke about this, but chapter one is not about health anxiety. We wait till chapter twos and threes. Yeah. Chapter one is actually about get ready for health anxiety. Let's get in the right mindset. We even start talking about mindfulness, about the mindset of being vigilant about anxiety. And unfortunately, if you see an anxiety therapist like Michael and I, and I assume Kelly and Lauren, you guys are the same, if you're coming to see me to get your anxiety to go bye-bye, you've found the wrong therapist. I'm not that therapist. And I say this without being disrespectful and being very genuine. I don't care that you have anxiety. In fact, you're supposed to have anxiety. The question is do you live in an or world or an and world? The or world is, I have anxiety and therefore I can't be the other thing, or because I don't have anxiety, I'm doing good. And mine is the and world, which is I have anxiety and, to Michael's point, look at the things I'm doing to add to my life. And I think we get in this dilemma of mindfulness, meditation, breathing, calming is all about the removal of anxiety. And in fact, that's not the approach for most anxiety specialists. It's an idealistic goal. It'd be lovely to not have too much worry, but we need worry and we need fear in our lives because it prepares us for real dangers. But mindfulness is not just an action or a skill to run away from the things that we're scared of. It's the mindset and the ability to be present with those discomforting feelings, big and doing the things that matter. And I think that's the real mastery of, it may not be the core part of our book. There's plenty of books out there that are all about mindfulness, but it's the beginning chapter of our book, which is if you're coming into this book to learn how to not worry and to live a full life, you found the wrong book. It's how to be okay with worrying and live a full life. We even in the subtitle, you know, we talk about it. At the end of, Kelly, we give a little bit away, but in each chapter, some books have these beautiful quotes by Buddhist monks and amazing philosophers to get you ready, like for each Proverbs. Chapter. Yeah, beautiful stuff. Like live in the, our chapters end with terrifying death statistics just to get you to be mindful of, you can read something that's scary and that doesn't give you cancer. That doesn't give you a stroke or a heart attack. It gives you the ability to see, feel, and hear content and move on to the next chapter.
Yeah.
And that and world for me is what mindfulness is all about as opposed to war.
This sounds like a very unique book that the world of OCD needed. And I'm so excited to read it now.
I appreciate that. I hope so. It's not one that most publishers want to get behind. Michael and I are aware of that. We might have some publishers after us because of I hope this book gets some positive success, and it has, but it's not the conventional book. And because of that, we know some people are going to read it and probably be a little bit overwhelmed by it or concerned that maybe it's not right for them. And honestly, it's probably not. But for the majority of us who treat anxiety, whether you take an ACT approach, an ICBT approach, an ERP approach, we're all trying to teach people these life skills that help you get ahead of your anxiety and to get away from catastrophic thinking. To do so, you have to think about and talk about and be one with anxiety. And if you can do that, the world feels much less scary and much more optimistic. And I mean, who can't get behind that?
Yeah, I know. Preach. I do really love that as you're talking about with all of the statistics, that ERP is baked into the book. Well, the E part anyway. Obviously, you talk a lot about RP, but that's really down to whether or not. And just for those listening who might be new to this realm, the ERP stands for exposure and response prevention. We talk about it on the show a lot. It's the gold standard treatment for OCD. And talking about the mindfulness piece is, as Kelly was saying too, so important when it comes to dropping out of mental rituals that can be so, so tricky, like recognizing dropping out of, getting back to life. But I also want to give you guys a moment to talk about the E part, because, and like, not that they have been for anyone who's watching, talking about exposure. But that element of just at regular intervals, introducing these ideas so that you're learning how to live with, and that phrase, I can't remember what the phrase you used at the beginning, or like it's sort of
The phrase is it's all your mom's fault. No, I'm sorry. Different phrase. Sorry, Michael.
It's all Josh's mom's fault. My mom,
Nancy, I love you. Happy birthday. She's
on birthday. Oh my gosh, it's her birthday.
It was a few days ago. Probably one of the phrases we use a lot is how to live with fear, not in fear.
That's the one.
The E for us, Michael and I know that, again, I'm looking at all the amazing books I have over here by the best of the best. Writing about exposure therapy in a book is really hard. I mean, writing about exposure therapy in a treatment manual is hard. Teaching it in our clinics and amongst people around the country is hard. But writing in a book, and this book is for people with lived experience with health anxiety. It's also for professionals, whether you're a junior professional or a senior professional. Michael and I wrote it that someone could sort of be taking it step by step with their clients and patients. And we've had colleagues write us and say, oh, this is a really cool book that I can use like along with therapy. And Michael and I orient our therapy approach following this book. But writing about exposure therapy, Michael, and putting it in a book and sort of handing it off to people and imparting it to them, man, that was not an easy task for us, was it?
Well, I think when we're thinking about this aspect of, we're talking about mindfulness, shifting our values. I think the one thing that we would want people with health anxiety to also know is that it makes it a bit more complicated when we're thinking about health anxiety, because there also can be health things going on.
Yeah.
And so we always have to balance this piece of, is it okay to continue to find medical care? Is it, when do we lean into uncertainty? When do we use mindfulness skills? When do we implement exposures? All of these different types of things. And the one thing that we always try to just include is that we're not medical professionals. So if you're struggling with health anxiety, it's important to, we try to frame it as a clean, reasonably good bill of health, like a clean bill of health, right? Is that if you have something going on medically and we haven't been able to go check it out, that's not health anxiety at that point. I mean, it could be still, but it's important. So we always talk about this importance of trying to get with a doctor that understands you, that listens to you, that is you're getting the answers relatively that are helpful medically. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big important piece, because there are a lot of, a lot of the fears that a lot of times come up with health anxiety is the concern of, what if I'm missing something? Or what if the doctors are missing something? Or what if this test hasn't shown, the correct answers or what we need to see? And we have to level with people that, with health anxiety, and especially if we're talking about like leaning into exposures, it's important to be able to have that foundation of saying, everything seems, we can come back to the mindfulness piece, right? Which is about the present moment. The information that I have right now says everything is okay. That might not be what my mind is telling me, because there's still a lot of scary thoughts that can go through my mind. But, we often get that. We've gotten that question quite a few times here in the last couple of weeks, I feel like, Josh, is we start to talk about like, well, what is that balance between when do you practice exposures or when do you go back and see a doctor? Like, how do we know if something is actually not going on? And we just have to level with people is we don't. I don't run MRI machines. I can't interpret those. I'm not a radiologist. Like, we don't know that. But what we can try to approach in therapy is, can we go off the information that we currently have at this period of time? And unless you can bring something in that says, hey, look at this. This is what the diagnosis is. Can we operate with, we're just not sure yet? That doesn't mean that at some point that something can't happen. I mean, I think Josh and I have both shared those cases where somebody's had anxiety around something and they found something.
Right. Yeah.
And then it's like, wow, okay, well, we need to medically pursue that. Actually, right. That just happened this past week for me with somebody. Mm-hmm. And so we have to kind of walk that balance, which is a difficult balance because of the fact that we're not sure what's actually going on, but could we operate and choose some actions that are most helpful in those moments in time with the information that we have? And if they haven't found anything, can we at least go with that until information changes? Mm. Josh, anything else you'd want to add to that?
So we went that route when we added a chapter about exposure therapy, but it's really more about taking on challenges. So Kelly and Lauren, I sort of felt like if we were going to be genuine about teaching the ERP side of this book and handing that off to people who may have no experience with therapy, I think it would be maybe tricky to say, here's what exposure therapy is. I mean, people write an entire book on exposure therapy. So we referenced it at a high level, what exposure therapy is and what it's not, and some of the myths about it and how really effective and very compassionate good exposure therapy is, given that there are some professionals and lay consumers out there who think exposure therapy is harmful and triggering and traumatic and almost any intervention can be that way in the wrong hands, yes. But it can also be very compassionate, life-affirming, and skill-building. And so we moved from the heavy E of exposure therapy to, you deal with this stuff all day long anyways, let's teach you what challenges are. And actually, I use, not that it's a special word, but I heard the word challenge going way back a few years ago to an amazing movie, Unstuck, the OCD Kids movie by Chris Baer and his team.
Oh, yes.
Such a beautiful movie. And kids were talking about, well, our therapists don't call these exposures, they call them challenges. And I thought, a seven-year-old can use the word challenge and figure it out. Why can't we as adults use that word? So, not that that word is special, but when I saw that in the video, I thought, what a beautiful way to reframe doing something hard with bravery, courage, and compassion. So we shift from the heavy E to just talking about how can you incorporate more challenges in your life, which is facing fears head on that are not inherently dangerous. To Michael's point, let's get that clean bill of health to the best of our ability, doing brave and courageous things, trying to make sure you don't give into those rituals, which are tricky with health anxiety, because there's so much that's about the internals of health anxiety. That's a little bit different than OCD. OCD has a lot of internals, but health anxiety has tons of internals. Things that are inside of us that are freaking us out, and take on those brave everyday challenges, face them head on, incrementally and stealthily in doing so, and then crediting yourself for it. So maybe they're not the most elaborate exposures that we would talk about in the clinical room, but they're still taking actions going towards scary things that are not designed to kill you. They're designed to make your life bigger. And we all do those challenges, but if you do them with intentionality, with a plan to be courageous, whether they work out or not, and to learn from them, again, that's what we all do every single day. But reframing it that way and giving yourself credit for it gets you one step closer to not living in fear, but living with fear.
Yep.
Pretty basic.
The and.
The and. It's a big word.
It is.
It's an important word.
It is.
Mm-hmm. So.
What else?
Oh, go ahead, Kel.
Well, I know we have to probably wrap up here soon, and it was lovely to have you guys.
Awesome.
Is there any like words of hope or encouragement you'd like to leave our audience around health anxiety?
I can start, and because something just kind of came to my mind is kind of going back to what we were kind of talking about in the middle of the podcast is that. There is a treatment out there. There's something that you can do. A lot of times in the therapy room, we'll break down different types of symptoms for people. And we go through and we talk about medical symptoms, which would be, of a medical origin, need to go to the hospital, get a scan, surgery. There's physical symptoms that are actually really symptoms, but they probably just need some TLC, maybe an ice pack, some ibuprofen. And then there's always going to be psychological symptoms, which are real symptoms that we feel in our body, but it's from a psychological place. Mm-hmm. And I think in a lot of times we get lost in the sea of, there can be all of these different symptoms going on. And unfortunately, a lot of times in health anxiety, it's always going to be the conclusion that the scary thing is it's something medically going on. And this becomes the cycle of scary thing about medical. We do something to be able to, we can call that a ritual, right? We could do something to try to get information, whether that's Google or check our pulse or whatever it may be. And I think the hope that I would want to give to people with that is that a lot of times people just get caught in that cycle. And it's understandable. Who wouldn't be? If I didn't know about health anxiety, I would be doing the exact same thing.
Absolutely.
I'd be going to the doctor again. Yeah. I'd be monitoring. I'd be writing in my journal about all of these different symptoms and what was my heart rate. I'd be doing the same things. Mm-hmm. And I think what we try to enforce for people and just try to remind them and make people known of to be able to give hope is that there is an answer to the things that are going on. It just may not be the answer that we're looking for. Just may not be in a test. It may not be in something else that you could put in your heart rate journal. It may not be those types of things. And it doesn't mean that those things are, we really try to enforce like your symptoms are real, no matter what thing this comes from, whether it's psychological, medical, or physical.
Yes,
it is real nonetheless. So, you know, a lot of times we hear people get discounted of like, oh, that's just your symptoms of your anxiety.
Right.
Don't worry about it. Right. As if that's not something to take care of too. So what I would really want people to hear is that if you're stuck in that cycle of no medical appointment takes care of it, here's my fifth test. It still hasn't come back anything. Maybe there's really no way to figure this out or feel less anxious. There are other options, that there are good psychological interventions that you can focus on, and get better from. So I think that's the one thing I'd really want people to hear, because I think we see it just about every week, Josh, where people are just stuck in that cycle and they're really at a loss, feeling like I just don't know anything that's ever going to help us.
I love that. I think it's such an important part.
Agreed.
For me, tomorrow's not promised. And for most of us who treat health anxiety, you'd think that death and dying was the biggest fear. And Michael and I know the more work we do, that's often not the biggest fear. The biggest fear is leaving our partner as a widow, or leaving our kids behind prematurely, or being a burden on loved ones as we're ill or in the hospice system. Our bodies changing, us getting fluffier, losing our hair because we're in chemotherapy, looking disfigured. And those are things that people are often fearing more than the absoluteness of death and dying, because it's sad to say, and Michael and I hear that sometimes people would rather just have the disease to know what they have, partially so they think they know what they're fighting, but also because it's that simple, it's that tangible. And as I say to people in jest, but also with some humility and compassion, like, if you're dead, we'll never have to discuss this ever again, which is a terrible morbid thing to say. But the reality is once you're dead, you don't have to worry about this anymore. Yeah. So between now and then, if tomorrow's not promised, what are you going to do today? So when we see so many people worried about, not so much about death and dying itself, but that process of death and dying, the anticipation of that, the things that are associated with it, I tell people, but you're living like that now. People with cancer, Alzheimer's, people are battling heart disease and significant neurological issues. Most of them are fighting like hell to survive. And God forbid something happens, we'll put on the pink outfits and run the 5Ks and raise funds for you and give you the best care money can buy if we have access to that. Until you need that, why don't we try and live like today is the best day ever? So tomorrow's not promised. The things you're most afraid of, you're creating yourself. And with a flip of a switch, as simplistic as that is, you can live a much more full life now by recognizing those fears are real, as Michael said, the real symptoms, but they don't really have to take you down. So just encouraging people to realize that they have much more control over what they do, even if they don't control how they think or how they feel.
Beautifully said.
Yeah.
You guys just preach, right? Like that's, I'm so on board with pretty much everything you said. No surprise there. So as Kelly said, we do have to wrap up. I did want to acknowledge too that for those in the comments who are asking questions about other types of symptoms in terms of subtypes of OCD, we do, we're happy to take suggestions. If you want to email us at purelyocd@gmail.com, as we do try to keep the questions within the context for posterity, so that when people come back and watch them, they it's sort of geared toward whatever we're talking about. And also, if you're really struggling, we can't be therapists on this platform, but there is help, sort of secondary to what Michael was saying, right? There's so much support available. We're happy, again, to sort of point you in the right direction. If you want to email us, we can send you resources. IOCDF is one that came up, and they have a great search function for clinicians. So, and also, you know, as Josh was saying, he's got a practice where there are, you know, 40 states where he can see, you know, where his clinicians can see people. I know, Michael, are you licensed in Illinois and in
Illinois, and Missouri, and Georgia.
And Georgia. He's licensed in three.
Whoa.
Boom.
Watch out, world. Trifecta. Bam. We do provide those kinds of services, but this just isn't the platform for it. So if you're struggling though, please seek help. There is help available, and there is a big, beautiful life that you can, you know, get back to living. So thank you again for being on the show. Yeah, we so appreciate having you here, and I guess we'll see you guys again next time.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. Just as a reminder, this podcast is not therapy, nor is it intended as a replacement for therapy. If you need further support, we encourage you to seek treatment with a registered professional who specializes in OCD.
If you have a moment, we'd love to hear what you think. Feel free to leave us any feedback by reviewing us on your podcast app of choice. You can find past episodes on our website at purelyocd.com. Remember, this podcast is for you, so please let us know what you would like to hear. We want to make our message as helpful as it can be.
We hope you will join us in the future as we continue our discussion on all things OCD.